dances in your trance so methodically. Not even distractions can lead us astray. We'll sing the same stories in a new kind of way. Hey. Hear this cries from the city and into the town. Political promise trying to smother the sound. The once even wealthy are now bolting their doors, afraid that soon they'll join rank with the poor.
That's the music of singer-songwriter Marcel Gagnon and his song, The Sweat. He's been sweating a lot lately, as much as three times a day. Marcel has been bringing the Native Sweat Lodge ceremony into his local jail. It's an important service for prisoners because one out of every five prisoners in BC is Aboriginal. We've reached Marcel Gagnon at his home in Prince George. Hi, Marcel.
Hello.
So, How are you? I'm well. How are you?
Good.
Can you describe what a sweat lodge ceremony is like?
It's very, very spiritual. I like to think of it as being like a church. You know, you go in there and you pray. You're doing two things. You're cleansing yourself physically, and you're also cleansing yourself spiritually. It's an ancient ceremony, and it's being revived now, and it's so good to see.
Now, what does the sweat lodge look like?
They're basically, well, I guess they vary depending on where you are. What I use to build mine is alder. You get alder branches, and they're bent. When you look at a sweat lodge from a distance, it looks like the womb of a pregnant woman. And basically that's what it is you're crawling back into the womb of Mother Earth, and you're being reborn maybe in your journey and your walk in life. You've strayed a little bit, and you need to get back in there and refocus and rebirth yourself in your direction, I guess.
What exactly happens once you're inside?
Well, we have heated rocks in there. And it's kind of unique the way we're doing it, because the facility and the sweat lodge itself is inside. It's actually inside the building, so it makes for a very different atmosphere. The rocks are in there are heated electronically, and you know, you get the traditionalist people who say, well, that's not right. But to me, it is right, because if there weren't one inside, some of the guys would not be able to attend a ceremony like that, because they're not allowed to go out in the yard. So to me, it's important. The rocks are heated up, and they're brought into the sweat lodge, and you can actually feel the heat when you crawl in there right away. There's a lot of canvas and plastic blankets and everything to keep the heat in. And then I have a bucket of water in there and a branch that I use. And I dip the branch in the water and put it on the rocks, and it creates a lot of heat and steam.
Is everyone silent when they're inside?
Well, what I'm doing, the sweat I'm running is a humble sweat, so there's no pipes or anything. Usually you go to a sweat and there'll be a lot of sacred pipes in there, but the one I'm doing is called a humble sweat, and it's for two reasons. It's for physical cleansing and prayer. And then after we do our prayer round, and then there's a lot of singing, and it's pretty intense.
What does the sweat ceremony provide for the prisoners that you meet with each week?
Well, from what I hear from the staff, it has an incredible effect on the guys. Because when you think about it, you're in there, even if it's only an hour in that type of heat, when you come out of there, you're pretty well drained. And the guys just want to get back to the units and, you know, just kick back. So, you know, it's a place to leave all the negative energies that I imagine you're surrounded with in an environment like that. So we believe your prayers, when you pray, your prayers are carried up in the steam, and all the bad stuff is caught in the willows, the alder branches, and it's brought back down into the ground to be gone forever. Yeah, it's very effective, very spiritual.
What made you want to bring the Sweat Lodge ceremony to the prisoners?
What made me want to?
Yeah.
I think we're living in a time right now, Tiffany, where there's a lot of questions about organized religion. And I hear it so often and everything, and, you know, never knock another person's belief, because our belief is that everyone is welcome and you respect everyone else's belief. But I think for too long now we were introduced to something that was so foreign, and there was an attempt by residential schools to completely wipe out our traditional beliefs. And for some reason, and I believe the reason was good, it never did disappear, and now it's back, and I'm happy. It's just to be part of it now. I feel like I'm doing something. I really feel like I'm doing something positive and constructive for those men and women.
How many men and women do you see each week, and how many sweats do you go through?
Well, I usually have a maximum of 7 men per sweat, and I do 3 per day. And the women that come, there's usually about 7. That's the maximum I can have in my little sweat lodge. So after a week, it adds up. By the end of the week, I'm pretty well drained. But, you know, it's worth every minute of it to hear. You know, I encourage the guys to pray out loud, because they may say something in their prayer that may touch the heart of one of the other prisoners who have gone through the battle they're going through at the time, and they go back to the unit, and maybe one of the guys will go and talk to them and say, you know what, I've been there before, and this is what I did, or this is what I wished I would have done. So to pray out loud is really a good thing, but there's a lot of guys who just choose not to, which is fine as well.
What kind of learning did you have to do before becoming someone that leads a sweat?
Well, I spent time with a medicine man from Alberta who passed away, and he's on the other side now. But I spent hours with him, and usually doing the door and getting the rocks all prepared and everything, just wanting to know. And there's different ways that you can obtain the right to run a sweat. You know, the Cree believe that you have to do a 3-day fast without food or water in order to earn that right. Whereas the Blackfoot, they welcome it. They say you can run a sweat. You can own make your own pipe and own it. You know, things differ wherever you go. And right now in Prince George, with the Carrier people, we're reinventing ourselves, I guess, in terms of how we would conduct our own sweat. Well, for one example is that we like to do brushings rather than smudges. Smudges are the way I learned it before, and that's where you light up sage or sweet grass or whatever, and you literally smudge your body with it to get rid of negative energy. Whereas our elders around here said we didn't do that before. We used branches and water, and we'd brush ourselves with that. So yeah, we're in a transitional period right now, and it's exciting.
What do you think brought about that transition?
I think just a desire and a thirst to rediscover our own past, because we were, I know a lot of Native people were devastated by residential school, but to look around you, if you're in this area, you see very little traditional things happening, and now there seems to be more and more and more of it, so I think people just want to. People want to get back to the old traditional ways, which is great.
There's a local lawyer and author here in Vancouver. His name is Michael Jackson, and he's written a book. And I guess in one of his reports to the Canadian Bar Association, he says that the prison has become, for many young Native people, the contemporary equivalent of what the Indian residential school represented for their parents. What do you think of his comments and
I
how what your work is playing into healing that?
Well, you know what? I agree with him totally. Leonard Peltier said that too. He said prisons are North America's swiftest growing reservations. And it is. You look at the numbers, they're so high. But I think it's all directly related to residential school and the after effects of it. And, you know, there's people that say, okay, enough now. But there was a lot of damage done there, and it's going to take a long time for us to recover from it. I agree with him totally.
In May, prisoners at an institution in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, went on hunger strike because they actually don't have access to the sweat lodge ceremony. How important do you think it is that all Aboriginal people have access to this?
I think it's critical. I think it's absolutely critical. Because the bitter taste of organized religion to us now is still a very, very bitter experience. And there's a lot of guys who just want to go and rediscover our old ways. It means more to us now than it did before. And, you know, I have my own personal views of organized religion. I attended church for years. But something just kept gnawing away at me and making me question things, and you know, like why if you know the Bible believes and talks about God and Jesus and everything, then why would he just go and choose a certain group of people to bring a message over here if he created everything, you know? Well, if he created everything, he surely created us too. So I think the difference is that we just had a different form of worshiping him. But now we're getting back to those ways, and it seems to be really effective. If you go on, we like to call it the Red Road. And when you go on that journey on the Red Road, it's for life. And that journey means, you know, living a healthy life in all areas. It's a lifetime journey. So I think it's great.
When did you rediscover your Native spirituality?
Gosh, I must have been in my mid-30s or 40s. I was at a powwow in a place called Quesnel, and I'd never been raised in an Aboriginal society. I grew up mostly in non-Native society. And when the drummers started playing and the dancers came out, the drum woke something up inside me. And I couldn't contain my emotions, and I started weeping and crying out loud, and there was a lot of people there. I didn't know what was happening to me. And even today, all these years later, I hear the drum, and it awakes something inside me. It makes me feel like I have a history. Powerful, powerful stuff.
Do you find that some of the prisoners that you meet with each week inside the Sweat Lodge, are they rediscovering Native spirituality for the first time through you?
Well, I don't like to say through me. I think, yeah, they are. And there's a lot of non-Native people that come to the Sweat, and a lot of them have never been to one. But the comments are basically the same when it's over. They just come out of there and go, wow. Because when you're in there and you hear the guys literally breaking down and crying and, you know, making apologies for whatever it is they've done, I mean, that's pretty intense stuff, and it does get to you. You know, you don't hear stuff like that because you're in a dark place probably, and you know you can't see the person next to you. It's that dark. There's nothing to be seen in there, so you tend to look inward, and when you do, maybe you're unhappy with what you see inside yourself. So when those guys break down and let it all out, it has an effect on everybody. And it's so great to come out of there and see the guys consoling one of their fellow inmates who's, you know, let a whole bunch of stuff go in there. It's the brotherhood, they call it.
How has working with prisoners changed the way you think about your own spirituality?
Oh, I can't even begin to describe. I went to a Sundance in Calgary here just a few weeks ago, and the intensity of a Sundance, I don't know if you're familiar with Sundance.
I've never seen one.
Yeah, that's where they pierce them through the chest, and they're attached to a rope to a tree, and for 4 days those guys, you know, this is stuff we don't like to really make public, but you know, for 4 days those men suffered without food or water, laying in the middle of the arbor in the intense sun. And, you know, and they do it for the homeless, they do it for the guys in jail, they do it for the women with addictions. You know, they suffer immensely. And it has a profound effect on me. I still haven't really recovered from that experience alone. But, you know, I come home and I think, well, I haven't written music for a long time, and here I am just overflowing with all these ideas all of a sudden. So I think I've got 10 songs here that were in need of titles and lyrics and stories and everything. And, I mean, I've got them all now. So, yeah, it's been tremendous for me. Tremendous learning experience, grounding experience.
So you've got a new album coming out. When can we expect to see that on the shelves?
You know, I haven't even got to the point of considering when I'd release it or where I'm going to even record it. Not at this point. I want to get the material all together and make sure that it's really good quality stuff before I venture out and say, well, I think I'm ready now. This album, I have no intention of rehearsing with a band or anything. I'm just going to, you know, I may go in there with just my acoustic guitar. I don't know. I haven't even planned that out yet.
Well, we're going to play your song Crazy Maker. Can you tell us a bit about that?
The Crazy Maker is, in our language, we call, you know, the dark side that we all have. And our old people call him Benny Hulo. It's interesting because I'm just doing a bit of an article right now called Who's Feeding Your Benny Hulo? And, you know, I speak with the guys about this in the sweat lodge all the time. If you feed your Benny Hulo, my mom told me, I can guarantee you most of those guys, well, all of them are in there because their dark side took over. And for me personally, while it used to be my Benny Hulo was my alcoholism. I drank a lot, and I, you know, I get cravings for it a lot, and I've learned how to manage all that. But if I keep feeding my Benny Hulo, well, it's going to become strong and bigger, and it'll overtake me. And he's made of fear and deception, and I guess the Bible would call him Satan. We call him Benny Hulo. And if you allow him to overtake your life, he's going to drive you crazy. And I just imagined what it would be like the night before Louis Riel went to battle, or Crazy Horse, and the very end you'll hear Leonard Peltier, who's still in jail. You know, what did he think about when they were coming to arrest him? Did the Benny Hulo or the Crazy Maker, you know, talk to him and speak to him and scare him, tell him he was defeated? I don't know. I just tried to imagine what those four people went through.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing that. Thanks for joining us tonight, Marcel.
Oh, you're very welcome, Tiffany.
Take care.
Thank you very much.
Marcel Gagnon is a singer-songwriter based in Prince George, British Columbia. He leads Aboriginal sweat lodge ceremonies inside his local jail. And here is Marcel singing Crazy Maker from the album of the same name.
Leonard Peltier.